Right, good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, April 20th, 2015. Happy 420. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Good morning, everybody. Hope you got up happy this morning. Mondays should be canceled in my book, but that's all right because today it is 56 degrees and rainy here in upstate New York. And actually, it was quite a relaxing snooze last night. I never got up from my nap. Listen to the pouring rain and the wind, and it was just like a lullaby. I crashed out hard and feel pretty good today, considering it's Monday. I woke up around 7 o'clock, which is unusual for me, but hey, it's all good. So I worked this weekend. I'm putting together all kinds of great dystopian stories to look at this morning. And I was derailed by a story that I came across probably about an hour and a half ago that got my blood pressure up and got me digging into some other things. And now, like, I'm all fired up. And we're going to have to look at this today because it just the magnitude of lies that are circulating now at an official level is just so above and beyond anything that I can freaking believe that it just, it's literally, and you guys are going to laugh at this, but my eye is twitching again. And that normally doesn't happen unless I'm pushed to the point of like mega stress. I mean, this isn't stressful, but I'm telling you, when I looked at this, I was like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, how do you compete against officials lying through their teeth? And then, oh, it comes out 20 years later that, yeah, it was all a sack of shit and everything we told you was lies. And we have people now that are dead because of it, people who've been incarcerated for lifetimes because of it. And we lied, but hey, we're sorry. One of the things I wanted to kick off with, considering it is 420, is Gupta, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, which, you know, I don't know, I've looked at his expose on cannabis that he's done over the last 6-8 months or so, where he changed his story on cannabis once he started looking into how it works on the body and the different cures that cannabis oil can be used for. And he, you know, changed his tune all of a sudden, and they did this whole series on cannabis and how great it was. And, you know, Gupta allowing himself into everybody's homes, and so they all trust him. And, you know, from day one, I've called bullshit on that because there's obviously an agenda. I know people got really excited when they started legalizing it in different states. You know, Colorado, we have all these self-made millionaires now because of cannabis being legal. But remember, this is not going to be done because they think it's good for us. There is an agenda. Number one, I think the tax money. I mean, there's such money grubbing scumbags that run everything. You know, they saw dollar signs, and dollar signs are what motivates. But secondly, remember that they are looking at patenting all this stuff. I know that there are some patents out there already. There was that company in the UK that Gupta toured, even though it wasn't legal in the UK, this company was working on all of these different medicinal uses for it. So, of course, you know, that's going to be patented. And they need to get it into the minds of people that marijuana, cannabis, is not an evil drug like they tried to paint in the 1930s with reefer madness. And I mean, there have been multiple generations now that have pointed to it like it was, you know, the Satan spawn. And they need to change that mentality to be able to now utilize their newfound cash crop. This newfound cash crop at some point too, you know, I need to find 100% evidence of this, but I've read enough stories about it. I mean, and we've watched Monsanto, we've watched genetic modification, the genome, and how they've been doing all kinds of crazy shit with our food, our plants, you know. So it's not too much of a stretch to believe that at some point, yes, marijuana will become genetically modified and they could do whatever they want to it. And here, once we get it all legalized and everybody is partaking like it's no big deal, all it's got to you know, all they got to do is like they're doing now. I mean, we all ate corn, and now 90%+ of our corn is all genetically modified with poisons, and the majority of the public doesn't seem to know or care, as it's doing immense damage to our bodies. So one of the things I want to play, though, so Gupta came out with a new little mini special talking about the wonderful many uses of marijuana. And this one is called A Quick Hit, Haha, History of Medical Marijuana. And actually, I thought this was a little bit interesting, so I was going to play it for you in celebration of the fact that it is 4:20 this morning. So everyone partake with your wake-up coffee, and let's check this out. And then we will continue to red button issues.
It's around 2730 BC. Legendary Emperor Shen Nung, regarded as the father of Chinese medicine, is exploring the benefits of marijuana for everything from malaria to poor memory. Use soon spreads across the continent. Though even back then, overuse supposedly caused blindness, sexual problems, and hallucinations, or as they called it, seeing devils. Irish doctor William O'Shaughnessy introduced weed to England and America in 1840, treating seizures, nausea, and menstrual cramps. Queen Victoria's doctor prescribed weed for his patients, leading many to wonder if the queen ever took a toke to ease the pain of her monthly cycles. Across the ocean blue, George Washington grew hemp, but it wasn't the kind that gets you high. Still, rumors persist he used it for two things. Remember, he ended up with wooden teeth. Soon, weed was in all sorts of medicines. A paste treated corns on the feet, cannabis cigarettes for asthma attacks, cough mixtures given to both adults and children. Books at the time listed dozens of medical uses for weed, but it didn't last. In the early 1900s, laws designed to crack down on heroin and cocaine began to target marijuana, and public hysteria grew. The campy 1936 film Reefer Madness popularized weed's negative image.
If you want a good smoke,
showing stone teens attempting to rape and kill, going insane, and committing suicide. Soon, marijuana possession and distribution were illegal. And in 1970, marijuana was classified as a Schedule I drug with a high potential for abuse and no accepted medical use.
And what's interesting about that is I honestly didn't realize that it was only the 1970s that it was labeled as a Schedule I drug. You know, so it's only been, what, the last 40 some odd years that they have been pushing the fact that marijuana is this dangerous substance that's going to cause, you know, death to life and limb. But in the meantime, we have had thousands, if not millions, of people who have lost their lives, their livelihood, their homes, their freedoms because of a plant. And so as I was watching this video, I ran across another video that Pigmine posted this morning titled, "Report Says That FBI Admits Forensic Testimony Flawed for the Last 20 Years in Hair Testing." And man, this got my blood pressure up because, you know, this is not the first time that we have run across, and especially just over the last few months, that we've run across fraudulent evidence that has been provided to convict people for different things, fraudulent evidence that has been provided to prove, like, we'll look at this too, vaccines are safe, you know, and then we find out that there's all this FDA fraud. I mean, what do you believe anymore? Because I am at the point where I don't fucking believe anything. Don't believe it because they tell you. And, you know, my mom always told me that. She was raised in a very strict Catholic environment where she literally told me when I was a kid that she was brainwashed by the church, and don't believe it because they tell you. And I'm so glad, you know, if there was one thing that I ever learned, that was it. And, you know, as time goes on and I learn more and more, you know, I spend my days digging into stuff. I just can't get over the bag of lies that are out there and the number of people that are just so completely oblivious to the lies. They eat it all up. They will regurgitate anything that they are told. And you are the crazy one because you are the one that's dug up the research. So let's listen to this. It says, the Washington Post says the FBI admits some of its experts gave flawed testimony in cases dating back more than 20 years in 46 states, resulting in 32 death sentences. 32 death sentences. So here, let's check this out. Wait, I think I disconnected.
FBI admits some of its experts gave flawed testimony in trials that spanned more than 20 years, and they were part of an elite forensic unit and reportedly overstated hair matches in almost all criminal cases in which they presented testimony before the year 2000. Quite simply, many lie about the testimony. The paper also says that in 95% of the cases reviewed, the mistakes favored the prosecution.
Of course.
Six states are now being notified to see if this could cause grounds for appeals in any of these cases. Joining me now for a closer look is a former judge, Glenda Hatchett. So we're talking over 2 decades. Nearly every justice and FBI examiner gave flawed testimony for prosecution against a criminal defendant. So is this paving the way for overturning a number of cases?
Yes, absolutely yes. That's the bottom line. Fabrica, this is horrible. I don't know how else to explain it. We have 32 people who were sentenced to death because of these cases. Now, let me make this an important footnote. It's not to say that all of these cases are going to be overturned or that they would not have been found guilty but for this evidence. But in these cases, we have 32 sentenced to death. 14 have either been executed or who have died in prison, which is the most troubling part of this.
Yeah, 14 of those people were either executed or died already. I mean, what the fuck? This is unbelievable. I mean, we know about the corruption of the prison industrial complex. We know about the stacking of evidence and how, you know, they can manufacture anything. I mean, there have been stories for many years about this, but we're talking, I mean, when you get back to criminal attorney general Eric Holder and we look at just how crime has completely overtaken the highest law of the land, and we have the NSA, the FBI, the CIA with all these operations that are going on, and then discover that there's all this flawed fucking testimony, how are these people even in charge anymore? Where the fuck are the pitchforks? Because this is making me so pissed off, you don't even know.
Testimony in trials that spanned more than 20 years. And they were part of an elite forensic unit and reportedly overstated hair matches in almost all criminal cases in which they presented testimony before the year 2000. Quite simply, many lie about the testimony. The paper also says that in 95% of the cases reviewed, the mistakes favored the prosecution. At least 46 states are now being notified to see if this could cause grounds for appeals in any of these cases. Joining me now for a closer look is a former judge, Glenda Hatchett. So we're talking over 2 decades. Nearly every justice and FBI examiner gave flawed testimony for prosecution against a criminal defendant. So it is.
I want to stop for a second because, I mean, then we start looking. If we just take these examples and then we look at things like such as the quote-unquote Boston bombing and the Sarnoff brothers. You know, the FBI were all involved in that. The FBI had all of their testimony about, you know, the brothers and how this all transpired. I mean, can we believe any of it? No, we can't. Don't believe 1 ounce of anything that you hear.
Paving the way for overturning a number of cases?
Yes, absolutely yes. That's the bottom line. Fabrica, this is horrible. I don't know how else to explain it. We have 32 people who were sentenced to death because of these cases. Now, let me make this an important footnote. It's not to say that all of these cases are going to be overturned or that they would not have been found guilty but for this evidence. But in these cases, we have 32 sentenced to death. 14 have either been executed or who have died in prison, which is the most troubling part of this. We know now that we have some 257 cases that have been looked at, 95% as you talked about, We know that there's flawed testimony, but there's another 1,200 cases that they haven't even reviewed yet.
And so we're talking quite simply, these examiners, these elite core of examiners
at the FBI
have admitted to not telling the whole truth, skewing their testimony in favor of, in large part, the prosecution. So they lied. I mean, that's a fancy way of saying they lied, went into trial, knowing that they were fabricating information, and it may have, in large part, led to the convictions.
Right.
Or at least, played a role in the conviction.
Absolutely.
So this was not some admission or this epiphany that some of these examiners had. This discovery is being made by way of, in large part, the Innocence Project.
Which is just amazing.
But the Justice Department helped, I guess, involve their perspective, right?
So what they did,
they were recruited to look into it.
Right. So the Justice Department and the FBI now are working closely with the Innocence Project as well as the National Association of Defense Lawyers. And so they, along with the Innocence Project, have said, look, we have got to figure this out. We've got to have new standards. We've got to have better standards going forward on one side. But now we've got to go back and look at all of these cases that have happened. So out of these 46 states, we now know that Texas, New York, and North Carolina have active investigations going on. Another 15 states have ad hoc investigations going on. But what does that mean in terms of what is already an overburdened justice system of these appeals going up and these cases having to be retried?
And with these admissions, is there a reason? I mean, why?
I don't know why. And that's going to be very interesting. And we haven't seen why. The Justice Department and the FBI have been very wise to say, look, this is a problem and we need your help in trying to get this resolved. But this, I don't understand it, because you had 28 investigators in this elite unit. 26 of them have done things that were not correct in these trials.
You know, I mean, like I said, not that this is any big surprise to anybody, but God, 26 out of 28 were fabricating evidence. And I mean, what do you think? You think this is just an isolated incident? Because it's not. And this included prosecutors as well as FBI investigators. I mean, none of us are safe. They could make up anything they want. You know, I remember reading something not too long ago about the conviction rate for the FBI, and it was a pretty high one. And I just found the wiki conviction rate. The conviction rate of prosecutors of government is the number of convictions divided by the number of criminal cases brought. Japan has a conviction rate that exceeds 99%, so that's got to be worrisome, which has been attributed to low prosecutorial budgets impelling understaffed prosecutors to present judges with only the obviously most guilty defendants. Well, yeah, whatever. In the U.S. federal court system, the conviction rate rose from approximately 75% to 85% between 1972 and 1992. So interestingly enough, that was once they made marijuana a Schedule I drug. And then for 2012, the U.S. Department of Justice reported a 93% conviction rate. The conviction rate is also high in U.S. state courts. Colligan, and I don't really know who that is. They're quoting someone who they don't tell you who that is. Says, quote, in recent years, the conviction rate has averaged approximately 84% in Texas, 82% in California, 72% in New York, 67% in North Carolina, and 59% in Florida. The Crown Court has a conviction rate of 80%, according to the BBC in the UK. One of the things that they did mention in this video was the Innocence Project. Donna this morning in chat had mentioned the Innocence Project as well. And there is a video here on the InnocenceProject.org. It says, under the About Us section, the Innocence Project is a national litigation and public policy organization dedicated to exonerating wrongfully convicted individuals through DNA testing and reforming the criminal justice system to prevent future injustice. I mean, how many cases have we seen just over the last few years of people who have been in jail for 30 years and they were wrongfully convicted who are finally just getting to see their freedom? I mean, how do they repay you for stealing your whole life? Who in their right mind felt that having a trial that was fraudulently executed, and many people lost their lives, whether it be via execution for capital offenses or just plain dying in jail. I mean, we had somebody when I was growing up, a friend of mine, his dad got busted. He had like 10 plants. And in New York State, they have a seizure law. They took the house. They took everything. And he went to jail for the rest of his life. The man died in prison for 10 fucking plants. You know, that was pretty upsetting. I was in high school at the time, and I really didn't realize that this was such a big issue. But, I mean, this was in suburbia, too, that this happened. It's pretty sick. So here, let's check out the Innocence Project clip here, because I'm very interested in this. I hadn't heard of this before, so thank you very much, Donna.
I just still have that letter. Can I see that? This is it. You still have it. This is like, wow. This is, wow. Mr. Sheck, I'm confident that whenever the DNA test is done, it will show my innocence and this miscarriage of justice.
You're the best of the best when it comes to DNA evidence. This is pretty much known throughout the country, and I desperately need your help.
Greetings. I'm James Harden Jr. I'm writing you this letter in sincere hope that you could be able to help me and my brother, Jonathan Barr, regain our freedom.
My name is Jonathan Barr, and I was wrongfully convicted of a murder and a rape of my friend, Catrisa Matthews, and I spent almost 20 years in prison for that crime.
I spent 15 years inside of prison.
I spent 11 years and 3 months in prison.
20 years, 9 months, 5 days in prison for a crime I didn't commit.
The system failed us. You know, tremendously, it failed us.
What happened to this female is wrong, and the real rapist has confessed to attacking her alone. They allowed the victim to be shown mugshots. All the mugshots was in black and white, with the exception of my ID. She basically focused on that, my ID picture, and when she saw me in the lineup, within 5 minutes after being shown mugshots, she identified me as her attacker.
It was a bite mark on the victim. And the odontologist said that my teeth was the one that made this bite mark.
There was DNA evidence that excluded us from being, you know, the donors of the semen that was found inside of Catrice. But I guess because they had these ironclad statements from co-defendants in our case, they still proceeded, you know, and we were prosecuted and found guilty.
I gave up in prison several times. I fought, I don't know how many appeals I filed.
I had just got denied parole for the fifth time. And one of the counselors that was working there, he pulled me. He wasn't my counselor. He just pulled me to the side. He said, look, he said, Marvin, you know, there's an organization out there that may be able to help you.
I had a lot of support from the Innocence Project. They were very, very helpful. That day I heard about the DNA testing and I was excluded, I was overwhelmed with joy.
It was a great relief to be able to walk out of there a free man after 14 years. I'm able to spend time with my grandkids. I can hold them in my arms. I can take them to church. Take them out to eat.
My mom was suffering from dementia and congestive heart failure. Despite of what her body was saying, her spirit was like, I can't die until my son gets out of prison. And she was able to see me completely exonerated on TV. And right after that, she died. She died at peace.
I wish my parents would have lived longer to see this, but I know in spirit, they're here. And they will continue to be here for as long as I am here and as long as my daughter is here. And if I am to have any more children, they will live through them. You know, but I'm thankful. I'm thankful to be home.
I can remember my first day coming home from prison. I sat up and watched the sun come up that morning. You know, and you see the sunlight every morning rise in prison. but to actually feel it, you know, as a free man outside of the fences, it was a totally different experience. You know, the whole time I'm watching it coming up, I'm saying, I'm free. You know, I'm truly free. And without this organization, a lot of men and women who are free now would not have been free. And I am one of those men.
You know, I mean, when you hear something like that, I mean, it kind of puts a human spin on it. And you have to wonder how many other thousands of people are in prison who didn't do it. And how do you compete against that? How do you defend yourself? I mean, look at Guantanamo. Look at all the people that they stuck in there and deemed to be terrorists. And I mean, a lot of these people claim that there was absolutely nothing that they were involved in that put them in there except for the country of origin that they were born in. And I mean, pay attention, people, because this is going to happen more and more. I mean, as they turn around and decide that, you know, our teenagers are being radicalized by the internet to become ISIS. I just saw that there were three more teenagers arrested in Minneapolis, I believe. As they decide that by searching on the internet, propane tanks or machine guns or whatever makes you a terrorist. I mean, I actually caught the story this morning. Hold on. That I was like, how, what are they doing, like real time comparison between what we're tweeting and air flights? Because there was this story from the security researcher, an internet security researcher, who had tweeted something about being able to hack a plane. He was headed on his way to a security conference the other day, and they fucking banned him from the flight. Now, how, they banned him from the flight because of a tweet?
A security researcher from Colorado was stopped from boarding a United Airlines flight after he posted something on Twitter suggesting the airline's onboard systems could be hacked.
He was banned from boarding a flight because he posted a Twitter post. Now, if this isn't the writing on the wall, and I mean, every single one of us should be very careful about anything we say, anything we post, because it's going to make you an insurgent. I mean, we've said this for so many years, but I mean, the reality is becoming true. How is this even possible?
Chris Roberts is the founder of One World Labs, a company that researches security risks. He was headed to San Francisco late Saturday to speak at a security conference, but was blocked by security at the gates. Roberts' attorney says his client did not get any details about why he wasn't allowed on the plane. Earlier in the week, Roberts was removed from another United flight. He was says after tweeting that he could get the oxygen masks on the plane to deploy. Roberts' laptop and other electronics were he has not seen a search warrant.
And, you know, so they took his laptops and stuff. And the thing is, to be able to tweet that you could hack oxygen masks or you could hack the plane, I mean, that's already well known. And they're talking about now doing these pilotless jets. And that was one of the questions that came out. But how easily can the jets be hacked? We saw three, I believe, airlines that went down or disappeared under mysterious circumstances. We saw that chick from DARPA. I don't remember her name. I just found another story about her the other day after Michael Hastings. We talked about that on Friday where his car went out of control at 100 and some odd miles an hour and slammed into a tree. And then the DARPA chick comes out and goes, yeah, well, you know, cars have been vulnerable to hacking for a very long time. And like we talked about last week with this whole Internet of Things and the takeover of every appliance and anything we touch and live around being connected to the Internet, which is the way it's all going. Anything like that is not secure, and anything like that can be hacked. We had Manit Napolitano talking about them being able to hack our power infrastructure, and back a few weeks ago, lo and behold, didn't we see a mass power outage in D.C. that got the White House, the Capitol, and a bunch of other buildings? They're like, oh, don't worry about it. It was just like, you know, some sort of transformer went down. But here's the exact location of the transformers that went down on a map from satellite to show you that if you attack these three stations, you could take out D.C. I mean, this is being so set up. And every single thing that you do is being tracked to be able to turn you into a criminal, even if you didn't do anything to further their agenda. I mean, I gotta say that as I watch this stuff, my blood pressure goes up so high because it is just beyond belief to me that so many people are eating this up. You know, when you look at even the anti-vaxxer movement, and I actually, there was something that I caught. Let me go over to the UCY page. There was something I caught over the weekend that actually this whole anti-vaxxer push that they've been orchestrating has now been blowing up in their faces, which is great. But, you know, you can't even believe anything that they're talking about in scientific research. I mean, we looked at this story back in February. I found a copy of it in IO9. The FDA is hiding scientific fraud and you should be pissed was the title of the story. And it comes out that all kinds of scientific research that's been published in these scientific journals was later found to be incorrect or fraudulent. And the FDA did nothing to have it redacted, fixed, or removed. So anytime that they are pointing to some scientific study in a journal to tell you that vaccinations are safe, to tell you that herd vaccination is going to provide protection to the group, don't believe one fucking iota of it. Because, I mean, it could be true, but it's very possible that it could not be true. And know that there is tons of money floating around in biopharma, GMO, all these different agencies, the military-industrial prison complex, that are going to be able to outweigh anything that a small mom-and-pop shop, a onesie-twosie, a small lab, you or me, anyone who has real evidence and proof can win. So the majority of the stupid public who doesn't question, who only believes what they saw in the headlines, is going to believe the fraudulent evidence. And we can read a little bit of this. I mean, we went over the story, but here, I'll read a little tiny bit. When the FDA encounters instances of scientific misconduct, it buries the evidence. A recent investigation sheds light on the extent of the problem. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the agency tasked with protecting public health via regulations of everything from food safety to prescription drugs, occasionally encounters a serious incident of misconduct in biomedical research. According to an investigation published in the latest issue of Journal for the American Medical Association, these cases include ... falsification or submission of false information, problems with adverse events reporting, protocol violations, inadequate or inaccurate record keeping, failure to protect the safety of patients, and or issues with oversight or informed consent, among other violations. Study author Charles Seif, an acclaimed science writer and professor of journalism at NYU, writes that, quote, the FDA has no systematic method of communicating these findings to the scientific community, leaving open the possibility that research misconduct detected by a government agency goes unremarked in the peer-reviewed literature. And we also saw another story not too long ago about evidence proving that they'd been paying a lot of these quote-unquote peer reviewers to review bullshit fucking studies and to agree with them. So you can't believe anything that's even been peer-reviewed. Back to the story, in the course of his investigation, he identified 57 published clinical trials for which an FDA inspection of the trial site had turned up quote-unquote significant evidence for at least the aforementioned problems. The problems with these problems is that they're not reported, at least not in any meaningful way. Quote, the FDA has no systematic method of communicating these findings to the scientific community, leaving open the possibility that research misconduct detected by the government agency goes completely unremarked in peer-reviewed literature. By failing to make this information readily available, the FDA compromises the ability of scientists, doctors, and the public, which means you, to remain informed about scientific trials fraught with misconduct. So scientific trials, yes, anything to do with vaccines is now suspect. Anything. Do not believe anything that you're told. I guess that is the lesson of today's show. Let me dig down through now because I totally forgot what that story was that I wanted to share with you, but I know the page that I put it on, so hold on 1 second as I scroll down. Oh, yes, the backfiring. So here we go. NBC News. I was surprised this came out of a mainstream publication. NBC News, pro-vaccine message actually backfires, study finds. Public health messages aimed. So I have to give a kudos because I'm actually very excited that this has happened. Public health messages aimed at boosting childhood vaccination rates may be backfiring, a new report finds. And quite honestly, pushing this mandatory vaccination without any type of being able to opt out, except for, I heard in California they are discussing maybe except for medical, whatever they call it, medical excuses, but no religious exemptions at all. I think that it really was a slap in some faces to parents that even if they were pro-vac, for the government to be telling them you have no choice in the matter. I mean, who in their right mind wants to be told by the government they have no fucking choice in what happens to their children? I mean, come on. And so I really think that this just pushed it over the line. So some parents came out and said, hold on one cotton picking second. What the hell are you talking about? Back to this NBC story. Current efforts to use scientific studies, vaccine facts and images and stories of disease-sickened kids actually increased the fears about vaccination side effects among some parents, even when they are successfully refuted, which, yeah, successfully refuted by what? In brackets, fraudulent studies. Claims about the link between vaccines and autism, they made parents who were the most wary less inclined to inoculate their children. That's according to a study published on Monday in the Journal of Pediatrics, which raises questions about the effectiveness of well-funded public health vaccination campaigns and the difficulty of swaying vaccine views, particularly when they are entrenched. That means us. That means people who actually see the truth. And here's the thing. I don't even want to call bullshit on it all. I just want to see some real evidence that can be proven to me beyond all shadows of a doubt, without any question at all in my mind, that they're safe and effective. And that has never been done. There is nothing that has been shown to me that says that it is in my child's best interest to inject themselves with something that I don't fully understand the long-term consequences on my child's health. There have not been studies done and any of this newfangled bullshit, mad science gone mad that's coming out that proves to me that it's not safe. Or that it is safe, for that matter. Look at the Gardasil vaccine. If that is any type of evidence, look at the crazy shit that's going on with the Gardasil vaccine using the newfangled virus-like particles and nanotechnology. Do you really want to put that into your kid to make your kid Generation 1 guinea pig? Absolutely not. Don't do it. Says current efforts that use scientific studies, vaccine facts, and images and stories of disease-sickened kids actually increase the fear about vaccine side effects among some parents, even when they are successfully refuted. Claims about the links between vaccines and autism, they have made parents who were the most wary less inclined to inoculate their children. That is, I read all this, but so what? That's according to a study published Monday in the Journal of Pediatrics, which raises questions about the effectiveness of well-funded public health vaccination campaigns. Yeah, like go get your line up and get your flu vaccine. And the difficulty of swaying vaccine views, particularly when they are entrenched. If these messages were working, we should increase the intent to vaccinate, says Brenda Nyhan, a Dartmouth College political scientist and media critic who led the study. This highlights the extent to which we tend to overrate how persuasive facts and evidence are in all kinds of domains. This, I'm going to translate that. This highlights the extent to which maybe our propaganda is no longer working, because people are starting to see the cracks in the cup. But anti-vaccination advocates say that the studies correctly spotlight the suspicion that some parents have for public health claims about vaccines and their resentment of efforts to spin the message. And absolutely, I resent every bit of the bullshit spun message. as is evidenced by probably the last 8 or 10 weeks of my show. Quote, it is a big mistake for public health officials to assume that those resisting public health messaging about vaccines and disease are ignorant, uneducated, anti-science, and that they lack a social conscience, said Barbara Lofisher, president of the National Vaccine Information Center and frequent critic of vaccines. Michael Belton, 60, a Seattle vaccine critic whose infant daughter died in 1998 after recommended vaccines, said parents want to make up their own minds. People are skeptical about drug companies, and why should they not be skeptical about vaccines, he said, and he's absolutely 100% correct. Nahan and colleagues looked at messages designed to reduce vaccine misperceptions and increase vaccination rates with the measles, mumps, rubella, or MMR shots. They conducted two waves of email surveys of nationally representative samples of nearly 1,760 U.S. parents of children younger than 18 in June or July of 2011. Parents were asked about their vaccine views first and later exposed to one of four messages: information about the lack of evidence that MMR vaccines cause autism, a vaccine pamphlet about the risks of getting the diseases, photos of children affected with diseases, and a first-person narrative of a mom whose son who got measles. A control group also received non-vaccine-related information. Overall, none of the messages increased parents' intent to vaccinate future children, the study found. So basically, all the propaganda failed in any way, shape, or form. Those who support a vaccine still plan to get shots for the kids, which is kind of sad. And those who didn't weren't persuaded to change. That must infuriate people like Bill Gates and Hillary Clinton. Information debunking discredited claims of a link between autism and the MMR vaccine successfully corrected parents' views. Oh, listen to that. That debunked decredited disclaims. So it successfully, quote unquote, corrected their views, yes, in an alter universe, but it didn't budge their intent to vaccinate, the study found. In fact, among these with less favorable views of vaccines, the chance that they would vaccinate future kids fell from only 70% to 45%. So as it was debunked, Nyhan says their objections started to take different forms. At the same time, parents exposed to photos or stories of kids sickened by measles, mumps, or rubella became more worried about the side effects of the vaccine to prevent the disease. That resulted in what Nyhan says is known, quote, as the danger priming effect. If you are exposed to images or stories about sick children, it may be easier to bring to mind other ways that children could get sick or face risks or harm, she said. So there you go. I don't know. I think that the fact, regardless of how it backfired, the fact that it did backfire was pretty damn awesome. I think that more people need to figure out that anything that they go over and above to push down your throat has an agenda tied to it. So pay attention, because those are those red button beep, beep, beep issues that I've talked about so many times, the ones that go off in your head. I mean, another one here. Let's just, since we're just winging all over different topics of lies and bullshit, how about the ability for the TSA to keep you safe by groping you in fucking airports? You know, actually, Pigmine had done, he has a whole series of videos sometimes when he gets to the point where he just can't deal with it anymore and he has to put together a compilation. And let me think of where a really fast place to find these would be. I don't know if I can get to them quickly, so I might have to hold on 1 second. Let's do this, because I want to play you. Oh, maybe it's on my Fukushima page. No, I didn't put it there. That's the other one, the radiation. But there was one about the TSA that was done a few years ago, but it really hasn't changed. But it was a pretty horrifying account by a large number of individuals who had been completely and utterly violated by the TSA groping them in the name of safety. And actually, here, we'll listen to this one now. This is a story that just came out a few days ago in regards to the Colorado Denver airport, where there is a TSA agent, there's actually a bunch of them now that are in trouble, that had been intentionally going over and above, signaling other agents when they saw someone that they wanted to grope to change the scanner. So let's say that you, and I believe that this guy had homosexual tendencies, because I think that the story was that when he saw somebody that he wanted to grope, he would signal one of the other agents, and that other agent would then change the scanner from a male passenger to a female passenger. So then when they went through the scanner, it obviously would find a mass in the genital region that then would set off the alarms. I mean, talk about like insidiously invasive, that would set off the alarms. So then he would have to grope that person. And I mean, how, I mean, that, oh, I've been to Denver Airport, by the way. I did not get groped there. I got groped here in Rochester, though, by multiple Maud-esque characters in a private room, mind you. I went through three gropings for that trip on my way to Denver as a stop-off. But how fucking invasive is that? I mean, that just really infuriated me. And, you know, again, this is this guise of overarching government's always right and you are wrong. You are guilty until you are proven innocent is what this world has become. And that is just above and beyond anything that our constitutional rights give us. Correct? Am I not mistaken? So here, we might as well hear this one. My blood pressure's up this morning, man. That first video about FBI evidence being falsified over 20 years and them admitting it. And all these people that have been prosecuted, people have been killed because of it. People are sitting on death row. You know, it's just unfucking believable. So here we go. TSA worker says groping happens all the time.
TSA officers using their high-tech scanners to identify, pull aside, and then grope attractive male passengers. That's what authorities say was going on at Denver International until the two officers involved, a man and a woman, were caught and left their jobs. And if that's not enough to horrify many flyers, now comes this from Time Magazine. The bigger issue here is a systemic one. There are far too many federal hands on people's private parts in airports. The writer is Jason Edward Harrington, a former TSA agent who insists this sort of thing happens all the time in airports everywhere. He writes, "The agent running his or her hands over you after you pass through the scanner is almost never doing it for good reason. What's more," he adds, "victims will likely never even know they were assaulted, since so
most of them are never doing it for a good reason." What? I mean, this is just horrifying. This is everything that we fucking said was going to happen. And these perverts that are groping your body parts are doing it for free jollies. And now it comes out that, yeah, that's exactly what's going on. As Chertoff made himself millions over these fucking scanners, like the nude body scanners, that then we find out they were sitting there getting their jollies, jacking off in a back room watching your naked pictures. I mean, this gets me just so incensed. And then you wonder why there's these attacks at fucking airports against TSA. I mean, there was one with a machete a couple of weeks ago. It's because people don't want to fucking deal with this shit. It's beyond. Every part of our humanity is being invaded right now, people.
Many passengers have their private parts fondled. To be sure, Harrington has written fiery critiques of the TSA before. Notably, this one called "Dear America, I Saw You Naked." He argues that full-body scanners are routinely used to let officers leer at passengers, and yet they find few actual security threats. The TSA has steadily pushed back against such notions and suggests the Denver incident is an oddity. The former administrator defends officers conducting by-the-book pat-downs as well.
Individual passengers may still object to that and how they do that, but as long as they're doing that correctly, they're doing their job.
Still, as authorities consider charges against those officers involved, the Denver story is supercharging Harrington's idea that it's difficult to tell where airport security ends and sexual assault begins these days.
Yeah, I mean, really? Sexual assault by the federal fucking government. That's what it's come to. I mean, this is just, oh my God, guys. I'm going to have to go take a nap after this show. All right, I found that video. Tyrannical Manifestation is what it was called. Like I said, this is from a couple of years ago, but I mean, this is where we've started and this is where we've gone to now.
If you see something suspicious in the parking lot or in the store, say something immediately.
Here in Chicago, we watched as passengers like this man are subjected to exhaustive security checks. He's patted down, his wheelchair is examined, and his hands are swabbed, all in public view, in a see-through room at the security checkpoint. And he's not alone.
It's humiliation.
I told them, I said, no, I don't, I'm not going to have my breasts felt. And she said, yes, you are.
When Hershkin refused, she says,
the police actually pushed me to the floor, handcuffed me. I was crying by then. They drugged me 25 yards across the floor in front of the whole security.
For arguing with a TSA agent, this woman winds up being slammed to the floor. She's filed a lawsuit.
I kept begging them over and over again, get off of me, get off of me, get off of me, and they wouldn't stop.
Report suspicious activity to your local police or sheriff. If you need help, ask a Walmart manager for assistance.
Walmart. The TSA agent was arrested on January 3rd here at Terminal 1 at LAX. He'd just gotten off duty and was behaving erratically, saying, I am God. I'm in charge. The agent was arrested under the welfare code.
She then proceeded to touch my buttocks, both sides with the palm of her hand. She then moved around to the front, touched the tops of my breasts and underneath of my breasts. Again, she gave me no instruction that she was going to do that. Then she moved to the bottom of my legs, moved all the way up my inner thighs, touching my private areas. And again, she did not tell me she was going to touch me in any of those places.
I've had to completely take my pants off and show them, like, my entire leg before. Then I feel like I'm being felt up in public.
And when she took me into the room and then patted me down, when she came to the breasts that had the prosthesis, she asked me what it was, and I told her what it was, and she said that she needed to see it. And so then I took it out of my shirt and showed her.
He ran his hands down the wearing blue pants down and down around my ankles.
At that point, Perry was standing in his underwear in public view. He asked to see a supervisor. That made things worse.
She was yelling, I have power. I have power. I have power.
But look at this. Is this really the best possible security?
Now, final question. My time is up, but would you submit to one of these pat-downs?
Not if I could avoid it. No, I mean, who would?
Thank you very much. Right.
Thank you for doing your part to help keep our hometowns safe.
I love that video. But it's so true. It is so beyond now. You know, getting back to what we were talking about in the very beginning with falsified evidence, when I was first watching about that FBI forensic lying that resulted in 32 death sentences, by the way, it reminded me of a story out of Massachusetts from a few years ago, and you might remember this one, DB, in regards to the lab technician. We covered this back a few years ago. There was a lab technician in Massachusetts that was arrested for improperly falsifying drug tests. It says Massachusetts lab mishandling may mean up to 1,140 inmates were convicted using tainted evidence. I mean, this is absolutely insane. And not in this story, but in a later story, it actually said that there were financial incentives for her to, of course, do more drug testing. And the more drug testing she did, the more money she got. And that's the dangling carrot. And that dangling carrot makes people do some pretty evil things, makes morals go out a window. And it makes you wonder if those FBI prosecutions also didn't have some connection to maybe yearly bonuses or something of that nature. When When money is involved, we see all kinds of horror. The complete defiling and raping of our environment has happened because of money. The complete lack of empathy, the building and bombing of children, and the profit machine of the military-industrial complex that is just about the biggest industry right now in the world is fueling death and destruction. I mean, this really is a complete and utter takeover of humanity. Greed and money has usurped any goodness left in human beings. And if there ever was an evil, it has to be the power of greed and money to do anything and everything and throw your brethren out a fucking window. All right, we might as well hear this. It's the last minute or so. This is this Massachusetts lab tech. Let's see. I don't know. There was a commercial the last time I ran this. I don't know if this is even going to play. But if not, I can read it. Maybe, maybe not. And it's just sitting here. So maybe we're not going to play this. Police in Massachusetts on Friday, and this was in September of 2012, arrested a crime lab scientist and accused her of faking thousands of tests that may have put innocent people behind bars. Annie Ducan was arrested in her home just outside of Boston. Police said that the former crime lab chemist admitted that she altered or faked test results of drug cases assigned to her. Prosecutors said she went as far as adding cocaine to samples that were negative. So, I mean, in the old days, it used to be a cop pulls you over and needs to find, quote unquote, reasonable cause to search your vehicle. And then they plant a bag in your car so they can impound shit and take you to jail. But now, if they even didn't find anything and they subjected you to a roadside forced fucking blood test, like we've seen them do in different states, like Georgia, I believe, was one of them, where they like strapped this guy down. Remember, they dragged him off. Actually to the police station with a roadside warrant and fucking strapped him down so he looked like he was in an execution chair with a bag over his head and forced drew blood. And that was horrifying. And here we are now. It doesn't even have to say that you had drugs in your blood if you have someone in the crime lab who's fucking adding shit to your blood test after the fact. They got you coming and going. All right, guys, we are down to the last 15 seconds of the show. I can't believe that hour went so damn fast because I could probably talk for another 3 hours. Make sure you stick around tonight because we do have a brand new Truth on the Tracks with Brandon Turberville. A brand new, actually, it's Webster Tarpley Show. Daniela hosted it this week. So we'll play that and a brand new Anti-Media with Nick and TV. Everyone have an awesome 420. Take care. Talk to you tomorrow.